63. Tomorrow, the areas of frost will be there until about 10 o'clock in the morning. Other than that, it'll clear up for us in a high of 64. Sunday, some sunshine, a high of 67. And Monday, mostly cloudy, a high near 71. We'll get back to a chance of rain showers on Tuesday. We have 48 right now in downtown Butler. Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. 12:30, Dave Mularkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Mularkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mularkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It is the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Been a long week for you? Yeah, for some folks it has been. I suppose for other folks you're saying, man, the week flew by. Weekend already. We got a real taste of autumn this week. You know, there were a few spots around our area this morning that had some light frost. It wasn't widespread at all, with only a few pockets of it, but we had reports of a little bit of frost on the pumpkin this morning, and that's the third day this week that we've seen frost. A lot of folks had it on Sunday, and then we had it a couple of days ago, too. So it's that time of the year. On the other hand, this promises to be perhaps the most beautiful weekend to drive around and take a look at the fall foliage, because it's really starting to turn. Not everywhere. There are a lot of trees that are still green. But have you noticed the ones that are green? They're dull, right? Yeah, the life is quickly going out of them. And we'll soon see those beautiful colors revealed. The reason why we think this weekend might be best, there will be a lot of trees that haven't turned yet, but we're looking at sunshine. Good bit of it tomorrow, good bit of it on Sunday. So weekend, sunshine, heading into late October, yeah. I hope to drive around a little bit out in the countryside and check out some of the fall foliage this weekend. Among other things, a lot of stuff to do. Boy, we're just so lucky, aren't we, here in our area? We've got things that happen every weekend, whether it's festivals or other special events or entertainment options. They're all over the place. So whatever your plans, enjoy. It does promise to be a nice weekend. Now, not the best of conditions today, although it is an improvement. Wouldn't take much to improve over the last couple of days, would it? Boy, it was brutal yesterday. It was windy on Wednesday, too, but yesterday, the wind was just blowing up a storm out there. Very blustery. And the high temperature yesterday was only in the mid-40s, and it felt like in the mid-20s when you're outside. We do not have the strong gusty wind today. In fact, much of the time it's been close to a dead calm. However, it is chilly. We've been struggling to get out of the 40s. Weather folks don't think we're going to do much better than low end of the 50s this afternoon. And we're at that time of the year where, you know, you usually hit your high around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because then you start going back down again as the daylight begins to ebb and the temperatures start to go down. And they're definitely predicting some frost here and there overnight tonight and first thing tomorrow morning. Well, it's that time of the year. Smile and enjoy the fall foliage. We've got a number of things to talk about on the afternoon show today on It's Your Turn. Osteoporosis is one thing, and we're going to be talking about that very shortly. Know what it is? It's like bone loss or bone weakness. It affects a great number of Americans, more than you might imagine. Now, I'm no expert on it, but we will be talking to an expert on osteoporosis, a medical doctor. His name is Dr. Angus Worthing, and he'll be joining us by telephone. He's clinical assistant professor of medicine at Georgetown University Hospital in D.C. So he'll be chatting with us about osteoporosis. Also, October is, I didn't know this, October is Energy Action Month. Time to take steps to save energy. And I suppose it is a good time to talk about that because, you know, everybody's firing up their heating systems now, whatever particular kind you have. And we'll be spending more time indoors during darkness. You know, in a couple of weeks when we change the clocks, it's going to be dark by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So how to save energy, not only for your electric bill, but just for the nation's energy grid. We'll talk with, believe it or not, the chief of the U.S. Army Reserve Sustainability Programs Branch. The U.S. Army uses a heck of a lot of energy, and they've already taken a lot of steps to try to reduce as much as they can. So we'll get some tips from Christine Pleschke a little bit later on the program today. And then I'm anxious to talk with Randy and Connie Seifer. They're local folks who are going to be talking about a recent mission trip that they went on, and I'm anxious to hear the details on that. They'll be with us here in the studio a little bit later on today. So good stuff to talk about on the It's Your Turn program, and I'm certainly happy that you are with us here today. We'll talk with the good doctor about bone loss, osteoporosis, in just a moment. Hey, folks, if you've been looking for a place to find those SAS comfort shoes, you've heard about those, right? SAS comfort shoes. They are the most comfortable shoes you're ever going to slip on. They really are. In fact, they almost feel like bedroom slippers. Your headquarters locally for SAS comfort shoes, that's Miller Shoes. Yeah, the Ciprian's on Main Street in downtown Butler. That's your local headquarters. They have a wide variety of styles and colors and so on. SAS comfort shoes. They're made in the USA, too, by the way. Miller Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. They've been there for 126 years. Unbelievable. They're also your headquarters for lots of other famous name brand shoes, like Rockport and Hush Puppies and many, many others. And boy, when you're talking about athletic shoes, they've got all the big name brands for everybody in the family, men, women, teens, kids. And there's always lots of pairs of shoes that are on racks on sale for easy browsing. Hundreds of pairs of ladies' shoes on racks all the time. So stop in, say hello to Jimmy Ciprian and the rest of the Ciprian family, and browse around a little bit. Miller's Shoes, a tradition for decades, over a century, in downtown Butler. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Listeners, coming up on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Mullarkey. We're going to be talking about osteoporosis today. Over 50 million Americans have osteoporosis. Many of them don't even know it or know that they're at risk for it. So here to talk with us about this today is Dr. Angus Worthing, MD, medical doctor. He'll be discussing the risks and the treatments associated with this disease. Doctor, nice to talk with you here today.
Thanks, Dave. I'm happy to be partnering with a nonprofit group, the Women in Government, to talk to you today about osteoporosis.
Well, my numbers are correct. It's like well over 50 million Americans have osteoporosis. Wow.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, about one out of two women over 50 and one out of four men will break a bone because of this disease, osteoporosis. It's silent. It's a painless disease. People don't know they have it. because the porous bone, or what is leading to the name osteoporosis, it doesn't hurt until and unless people break a bone, which is obviously quite painful and can be devastating for people. About a fifth of older adults don't survive the year after a hip fracture, so it's a critical topic for people and their families to know about.
Do we know what causes weak bones or osteoporosis?
Yes. So part of it is natural. We're living longer, hopefully happier, healthier lives. And after age 30, it's normal for bones to lose a little bit of their calcium. That's when people have peak bone mass at age 30. But some people's bones thin out sooner than others. Women are more at risk than men, especially women who undergo menopause early because they lose estrogen that helps keep bones stronger. But men can also get osteoporosis, as we said. Because of this, women, when they reach 65, need to get screened. Men need to get screened when they turn 70. And anybody over the age of 50 who has certain risks needs a scan.
Is it congenital? Does it run in the family? I had a great grandfather who was well up in his 80s, who fell, and he was in a nursing home for the rest of his life. He never walked again. And at the time, the doctor said, "Well, he fell and broke his hip." But I talked with another doctor some decades later and said it was probably the other way around. He probably broke his hip and then fell. That's possible.
Wow, that's a terrible tragedy about your great-grandfather, and unfortunately that's the reality for a lot of Americans. About one out of four people who break their hip do end up in a nursing home, and it can lead to a lot of problems and other health problems because of the lack of mobility that your family member probably sustained. Some people get pneumonia because they're not moving around, or they get a blood clot, and these can be really difficult medical problems.
Sure.
And a lot of families know that their older family members have osteoporosis because of fractures. That is one of the main risks. If mom or dad broke a hip, if a family member is involved, has osteoporosis, that's one of the reasons that people need to get a DEXA scan to find out if they have it before they go and break a bone.
Does it often present in a broken hip or a leg bone? Is that where the damage usually occurs?
It's a little more common to break the bones in the spine, actually, the vertebrae.
Huh.
And that can happen just from the natural weight of gravity on somebody's body. But other important fractures happen in the wrist, the hip, like we've talked about, the ankle. And these can all be major debilitating life events. Unfortunately, only about a quarter of people that break a bone end up undergoing screening tests or get treatment. So it's great to get the word out so that people know if they've broken a bone, go ahead and get screened to find out if you have osteoporosis.
Is osteoporosis in the back or the spine, is that what leads to, and we see this in some older folks, a stooped posture or kind of hunched over, is that the problem?
That's one of the reasons for this sort of stooped over alignment of the upper back. That can be from this process of compression fractures, or the fracture of the vertebrae, the bones in the spine, just crushing naturally under the weight of gravity. And when that happens, it can tilt the spine forward or one way or another. It can be quite painful. There's some other things that can cause those alignments as well. But when people notice that, it's another thing to raise the flag that it's time to get screened.
And you mentioned a few minutes ago that this occurs far more often in women than men. Is that because of hormones, doctor?
It probably is. There, women are protected when they have estrogen, and so if a woman has menopause early in her life, she's at more risk. Men have testosterone, more testosterone than women, that helps keep their bones stronger. So everybody, every woman at 65 or earlier if they have risks, and men at 70 need to get screened. There's some other risk factors, though, which are good to touch on.
Yes.
For people, folks who have a family history, people who are too slender, thin, people who drink more than a moderate amount of alcohol or caffeine, and smokers are at a higher risk of osteoporosis and broken bones.
We're chatting about osteoporosis with Dr. Angus Worthing, MD. A little bit about the doctor. He's a graduate of Princeton University and the University of Minnesota Medical School. Did his internship and residency at Georgetown University Hospital, where he's currently a clinical assistant professor. You mentioned screening. How is that done, doctor? Is it some sort of imaging or blood work, or how do you screen for osteoporosis?
That's a great question. The actual test itself is pretty simple. It's like a low dose of an X-ray, a couple of different X-rays that look usually at the hip and the lumbar spine, the lower part of the back, sometimes the wrist bone, and that in a computer tells doctors how much calcium is in those bones and what people's risks are of breaking a bone. From there, sometimes lab tests are helpful to figure out why people have low bone density and what they might do. Lifestyle changes can be really helpful, like taking calcium, getting vitamin D, and taking some good walks, a 20-minute walk every day. Medications can be helpful, too, to lower people's risk when they're identified having osteoporosis.
I know that you have a great interest in public policy. Do you happen to know if these screenings would be covered by Medicare for seniors?
Yes and no. So what's happening right now in the U.S. is every Medicare beneficiary is covered for a DEXA scan at age 65 for women and men at 70. However, the reimbursement cuts from Medicare over the last 11 years have resulted in thousands of scanners being taken out of doctors' offices, and 3 million fewer people received DEXA scans over the last 10 years than were expected, which, as you can imagine, resulted in more hip fractures in the United States. So it's covered, and I recommend that people ask their doctor about whether they need to be screened, and they can also find out more about how their elected officials can support screening tests.
Mm-hmm. I know you're a chair of some policy committees. Do your organizations lobby for changes here in Washington?
That's right. I actually practice rheumatology in Washington, D.C., and I'm the chair of the American College of Rheumatology's Government Affairs Committee. Right now, it's exciting that Congress is considering legislation to support osteoporosis screening. People can go to the website, womeningovernment.org, to learn more about this important legislation.
You mentioned calcium and vitamin D. I see more and more products at the supermarket that are fortified with calcium and vitamin D. Orange juice, milk, for example. Should we look for that or not?
That's a great question. People, especially kids and young adults who want to pack in as much calcium as they can before they reach peak bone mass, should make sure they get enough calcium in their diet. Also, later, as people age and if they develop osteoporosis, they definitely need calcium. It's actually recommended to have 1,200 milligrams of calcium every day for people who have osteoporosis. And they can get it through diet just as well as vitamin supplement.
And you say that osteoporosis in many cases is painless. It's a silent disease. People might not have experienced any pain and not realize that they have it.
That's right. And actually, in my clinic, it often happens that we're reviewing somebody's DEXA test results. And for example, I might tell them that they have osteoporosis in their right hip where the scanner found low calcium content. And people will ask me, you know what, I've been having some pain in that right hip recently. Is that what's causing my pain? And the answer is actually no. Osteoporosis doesn't hurt at all. Something else is probably causing that pain, and we can get into that. But that's why it's so important to ask your doctor if you need a scan, because without that, you might not know that you have osteoporosis.
What else might be causing the pain? Arthritis or something?
A lot of things could cause hip pain. Yeah, in older adults where the hip is worn down, it can hurt. Back pain can sometimes be right around that area, and lots of other potential problems.
Mm-hmm. the scanning that you're talking about, is that complicated? Can it be done by your PCP in a physician's office, or does it require a hospital stay? Can you talk about that a little bit, Doctor?
Sure. A DEXA test only takes several minutes. It's a very simple test. It's a lot like an x-ray where somebody lies down on a table with a small scanner above it, and the machine takes a couple of pictures, usually of a hip and the lumbar spine or maybe the wrist. It only takes a few minutes, and then the doctor is given a report of how much calcium is in the bones and, really importantly, what people's risk are of a broken bone. These scanners exist in a variety of settings, like a primary care doctor's office, some hospital or imaging centers, and people might get an order to go get the test from their primary care doctor, from a specialist, or when they're leaving the hospital, if they've unfortunately broken a bone and they've received care for that fracture, it's probably going to be recommended that they get a screening test.
Do you have to drink any kind of special concoction before you get this screening?
No, really, two-step process. Check in with some paperwork in which the paperwork asks if you have certain risks, like a family history, checks height and weight for certain medical conditions, et cetera, and then 5 or 10 minutes on the scanner, and you're done.
Hmm. We're talking about osteoporosis. It's a good time to talk about it because in the month of October, we mark World Osteoporosis Day. What about, and especially for older Americans, if you have osteoporosis, does that preclude hip replacement or knee replacement? Would that affect it in any way, Doctor?
Well, the answer is maybe. When people have osteoporosis, their hip replacement or knee replacement surgeon will often want to have the best quality bone possible to put that new joint in. And so we'll often work with orthopedists to make sure people's bones are as strong as possible going into surgery. But it doesn't mean necessarily that they can't have a joint replacement.
Hate to sound mercenary about this, but osteoporosis is responsible for billions of dollars in medical costs every year. There's new bone health legislation under review. Should people contact their members of Congress and let them know how they feel about this, Doctor?
You're exactly right. We spent $57 billion last year on the cost of fracture care from the system and hospitalizations and also patients' out-of-pocket costs, families sometimes missing work to take care of loved ones. So it is a big problem, and we're in a bone health crisis. And just in time for World Osteoporosis Day this month, Congress is considering legislation to support osteoporosis screening. And people can go to the website womeningovernment.org to learn more about how their elected officials can support important screening tests in Medicare.
Oh, that's good. What was that website again, Doctor?
Sure, that website is womeningovernment.org for the Bone Health Toolkit.
We're boning up on the facts today, if you'll pardon that pun, folks. Boning up on the facts about osteoporosis. And a good man to talk to, Dr. Angus Worthing, M.D. Thanks, Doctor. Very informative. Thanks for being with us here today.
Thank you, Dave.
Sure. So long now. In today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Cohen Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind Kings and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time from trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels. With Cohen Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Cohen Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex, your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Cohen Postal Butler. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. You know, one of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive. Time to take action, listeners, and save energy. On this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're going to talk about some lessons from the U.S. Army Reserve. Joining us by telephone to talk about that is Christine Ploschke. She is Chief of Army Reserve Sustainability Programs Branch. Christine, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
So October, and I didn't know this, October is Energy Action Month. What are we supposed to do in October, Christine?
Well, in Energy Action Month, we want everyone to recognize what they can do to support energy conservation and resilience.
Mm-hmm. And we can take good advice from the Army Reserve, because I understand there's a plan in place in order to secure critical missions in case there's some sort of an energy disruption. Can you talk about that a little bit, Christine?
Absolutely. The Army Reserve has 190,000 soldiers and 11,000 civilians who operate within 42 million square feet of building space across the nation. So we're a major power consumer. Energy access is essential for the Army Reserve's resilience. So if our energy supply is disrupted, we still need to have the power to perform critical operations, whether it's electricity that powers our facilities or fuel that's powering our vehicles. Energy touches nearly every aspect of the Army Reserve mission.
And I understand the Army has set a goal of having 2 weeks' worth of energy and water available in case there's some sort of an emergency.
That is something that we take seriously within our planning considerations, and we do always evaluate our opportunities at each location to strive to meet those sort of goals. For example, we've invested in renewable energy technologies to the point where we have enough renewable electricity to power 1,776 American homes for 1 year. We're also actively pursuing modern solutions like microgrids with battery storage and even systems that can transform everyday garbage into usable electricity.
Well, there are lots of threats against our nation's energy security. It could be a natural disaster. I know here in western Pennsylvania, just last fall, late fall, early winter, we had a horrendous snowstorm, and there were people that were without electricity for 4 or 5 days. It was a real emergency. There are other factors, though. Fluctuating fuel costs can have an effect. And from the Army standpoint, even an adversarial attack like cyber weapons or something like that. There are some changes that the everyday folks could make, Christine. Can you talk about some of those? What can we do to help energy reduction?
Sure. You know, it's a lot easier than you'd think. With winter on the way, weatherizing the home to eliminate air leaks and increase insulation not only makes for a more efficient home, but a more comfortable one. We also recommend using natural light whenever possible, but where you do need artificial light, consider using energy-efficient LEDs. Army Reserve sites have reduced their energy use by as much as 85% just by switching over to LED lights.
It's amazing. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that, you know, we had incandescent bulbs, and now we've got LED everywhere, and it's an incredible reduction in, first of all, savings in the household budget, but more importantly, energy reduction. Talk a little bit about computer monitors and lots of new TVs. The reason that they're instant on is that they're constantly drawing a little bit of power even when we're not using them, right, Christine? So you have to shut those down.
Yes, we call that vampire electricity, and a great way to avoid wasting energy in that fashion is to choose Energy Star certified models when purchasing your electronics and appliances.
And power strips can help out too. I know I have a power strip that's connected to my TV and all the various accoutrements, the DVD and the digital recorder and all that stuff. And when you turn the TV off, a couple of seconds later, it automatically cuts power to all of those other devices. And that's really handy.
Absolutely.
Also, let's talk about adjusting your thermostat all seasons. That can make a big difference, too. Can it not, Christine? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Set your thermostats to 68 degrees during the fall and winter and 78 degrees in the spring and summer. You can, as you pointed out, you know, you can save about 3% in your energy bill for every degree that you turn down your thermostat within those seasons.
I guess I never thought about it before. What an incredible user of energy the Army Reserve is. But when you detailed it, Christine, I said, yeah. And the Army Reserve has already implemented a lot of these changes, and you can too. And this would be a good time to look around and see what you can do. October, Energy Action Month. Christine Pleschke, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for giving us some tips here.
Thank you so much for your time, Dave.
Sure. So long now.
Take care.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Welcome back, good folks. Some good tips there about Energy Action Month and saving some money on your electric bill and your heating bill as we move into the cold weather months. I'm most anxious to chat with our next guests. They're with us here in the studio. And earlier this year, they went on a trip, believe it or not, to Africa. And we'll find out why in just a moment or so. Randy Seifer is here. Randy, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to be here.
And Connie Seifer, Randy's wife, is also here. Connie, nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you, Dave.
So the two of you earlier this year went to Uganda.
Yes.
Am I pronouncing it correctly? Is that how they say
Uganda.
It? Uganda.
Yeah, close enough.
Well, I'll try to do it right.
Okay.
Uganda. And the first question that most people would ask is, why in the heck did you go to Uganda? Connie?
Our son and his wife and our grandson live there. They do ministry. Actually, they come home in October, November, and are here for a month or so. And when Silas came, he said, Grandma, you're coming to my house for my birthday in November. They knew it would take 6 months for Grandma to agree to before I would go there.
So. Silas is their son?
Right, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So he turned four while we were there.
Now, would we correctly term Tim and his wife as missionaries or no?
Yes, that'd be correct. They're mm-hmm. missionaries there.
How did Tim end up in Uganda?
When he was in school, he went to out to Chicago to Moody Bible Institute. He had to go to some country, a foreign country, for one of his classes. So over like Christmas break, he went there. And ever since he was a little boy, he always felt led to be a missionary. And when he was over there, he said, Uganda is the place. Hmm. And ended up going back there full time now.
And what about his wife is Janessa, am I right on
Janessa,
that?
Janessa, yes. She's a Canadian from Winnipeg. They didn't know each other till they met in Uganda. Her mom has an orphanage over there as well as a little ministry, and she was over there helping her mom. And the two never knew of each other till they met there, and the rest is history.
Wow. It's a great story. And how long, Connie, has your son Tim been over there now?
Well, 4 or 5 years. They came back and stayed for a while because of trying to get nationalization for Janessa to be a citizen or whatever, so that they could come back to the same country. So,
I see.
So for a while, he worked as a youth pastor up at her church in Canada till they could get her legally be able to be here.
There's all kind Silas of papers got, you yes. got to go through, visas and all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Right, Silas was able to get dual citizenship, but it was really tough for, they accepted Tim right away up in Canada. It was hard to get Janessa approved here in the United States. So mm-hmm. once that was done, then they've been over there, I think 4 years now since mm-hmm. then.
Is your family originally from this area, Randy?
Yeah, both of us are born and lived in Butler all our lives.
Hmm. And did Tim go to school here?
Yep, he was at Knox School, graduated from there with all his brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of Moody Bible Institute. Where is it again?
Downtown Chicago. So we spent a number of years out there. It's Chicago's a great town, lots going on there, and he enjoyed it there.
Well, you know what Sinatra said, my kind of town, Chicago is. So you decided, perhaps after much deliberation on Connie's part, that you were going to go to Africa to visit Tim and Janessa.
It is a very long plane ride.
Hmm. When did you go?
In the spring, we left, departed from Pittsburgh. And it was an overnight flight. Well, we went Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. then an overnight flight to Heathrow Airport in London, and arrived there in the morning their time, which is a handful of hours different than here, and then waited a few hours there, and then we left for Kenya. So it flew from London. Kenya is the neighboring country. There's a handful of international airports. So that was the nearest airport to Uganda. We spent the night in Kenya and then over to Entebbe, which is about an hour and a half away, a short flight. That's their Uganda's airport, Entebbe.
Wow. That's not like going to Shikora, is it, Connie?
Definitely not.
Wow. Is that the longest trip you've ever taken to
yes.
get to the destination?
Saddle swords the whole way.
Oh, yeah, you'd be forgiven for being a little cranky when you finally got there.
Yep.
So that was this spring.
Yes.
What's the? First of all, we better identify for our listeners just where Uganda is. I only know this because I looked it up on the map earlier
Randy,
today.
Not me.
Because I didn't want to appear totally stupid when I was chatting with you today. It's in East Central Africa.
Correct.
But it is not on the eastern coast. It's landlocked. It's a country or two in.
Yes.
So East Central Africa, you mentioned Kenya is mm-hmm. right next door. Sudan is a border. Democratic Republic of the Congo is another border. And I didn't realize this, Lake Victoria. A considerable part of Lake Victoria, which is one of the largest lakes in the world, is in Uganda.
Yes, that's Entebbe Airport is right on the lake.
Oh.
So you fly in over the lake and land at the airport. And Lake Victoria is actually the source of the Nile River. So it goes all the way from Lake Victoria to Egypt, whole way through Africa.
Must be quite a feeling to be there and look at that and think, wow, source of the Nile. Huh?
Yep, it's amazing.
Wow, wow. So where exactly in Uganda is Tim and Janessa, where are they set up? Connie?
It's Gulu, was the town that they're from, which is 5 or 6 hours north. of mm-hmm. Kampala, the capital city.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all learning about the cities here. Kampala's the capital. And Entebbe I had heard about because many, many years ago there was a terrorist incident there.
Yes.
And that was when, listeners may remember this name, notorious bad guy Idi Amin mm-hmm. was the strong man who ruled Uganda, which was a member of the United Kingdom, the British Commonwealth, and it didn't get independent until the late early 60s.
Yes, so 1962 is a gained its independence from Britain,
mm-hmm.
and in the 70s, Idi Amin was the dictator. And if you ask people now, what do you think of Idi Amin? How was he? And they all say he was a great president.
Huh.
Pause. But except for the killings. Wow. He's a great president, except for the killings. But he was great to them because he built roads and schools, and that's something they did not have. And so they thought he's just wonderful for doing that. Mm. And if you have to kill a few thousand people along the way, I guess that was okay. But
he was a supreme bad guy, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when we landed in Tebby, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is that's just like the rescue from the terrorists that Israel did. Same airport, same runway. I thought, wow, what a piece of history here.
Yeah, and details are a bit foggy in my mind. I think there was an El Al jetliner that was hijacked to Entebbe, and then Israel sent in a commando team to free the people and get the plane out of there.
Yes.
It was quite a while back, but
quite a daring operation.
As you say Entebbe, you know, that's the first thing that pops into my mind.
Yes.
So were you able to experience, some of the average days of your son at his location there? What does he have, a school, a church? What happens there, Connie?
Randy helped out there a lot. They were getting ready for the first group of men that were pastors that were coming in to be discipled. I was with my daughter-in-law and going to school to volunteer, the preschool, and she had an art class for some of the kids and dance class and things, so I was more in that area. Randy was helping Tim get all set up for the ministries.
Mm. Yeah. Gulu is a city of about, actually, 150,000 people. It's about the size of Butler, but if you go out and take all the people in the surrounding area, it's about 150,000. So just think of Butler with 150,000 people in the city and surrounding areas. That's Gulu. His ministry place is actually about 20 or 30 minutes outside the city, so it's out in the bush, you would say. And he's built a two buildings there. One is a little dormitory that they can get about 16 pastors there who sleep and stay for the night for a week. And then he has another building that's a kind of an open building, pavilion-type building, where they actually have their classroom training. And that's where he and two other local pastors teach the pastors that come in, train them in the Bible. You and I probably grew up going to church and Sunday school and things like that. These people did not grow up with that, and some of them can't even read and or don't have a Bible to read. So they become Christians, but they have no idea what that means. And when you combine the little bit they know about Christianity with their tribal customs of witch doctors and spirits and things like that, you get some very strange beliefs. So he felt led that he needs to teach these local pastors that are out in the bush, get them some good biblical principles, and then they in turn, he picks people who in turn will go out back to the bush to their villages and then relay the same information to the people out there who don't even have Bibles and can't even read.
Does he consider it a rough life? You spent some time with Janessa. They probably don't consider it that way, right? I mean, that they feel that's their calling.
Right. I think it wasn't so rough, although we stayed in a hotel that they made sure had some air conditioning when the electric would go off.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't always turn it on till they were sure the electric was off for hours. But, they had a smaller apartment and electric go off or you wouldn't have water. And they're used to that. You know when you can use the internet and when you can't. So it wasn't as rough as I expected. But I'm happy to be in the United States.
Yeah, I've read about there are many countries in developing parts of the world where they may have electricity, but they don't have it 24 hours a day.
Exactly right.
It's turned off in some places, so they can use it in other places.
It's really hard to sleep. We're not used to the heat there. And when the electric would go off and the hotel didn't turn the air conditioning on with their backup batteries, the windows are closed because you have to keep the mosquitoes out. They carry malaria, and you're just closed in a room with no air movement or anything, and it's hot.
Hmm. And you were there in the spring.
spring it was moderate temperature, although hot for us,
mm-hmm.
and it gets up 100 degrees and so during the summer.
That would, you know, when I looked on the map, I didn't check where the equator is. That's probably, if not tropical, it's pretty close to tropical climate. Huh?
Yes, the equator actually runs through Uganda just south of the airport. So we almost went down there, but that was going the wrong direction to where we were headed. So
you want to get one of those pictures with 1 foot in the southern hemisphere and 1 foot in the northern hemisphere.
Right. Uh-huh.
Hey, we'll take a break. This is so very interesting to me, chatting with Randy and Connie Cipher, who visited their son and daughter-in-law this spring in Uganda, in East Central Africa. How about that? A quick break. Back to chat more with our guests right after these words.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
The days and weeks immediately following the loss of a loved one are so difficult, so personal. You think, does anybody really understand how I feel? I can't even understand it myself. I wish I could talk to someone about it. Well, you can. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique program called Someone's Caring. It's carefully and sensitively designed to help you ease the pain, to help you fill the gaps when you feel so alone. Men and women are invited to attend. Yes, men are beginning to realize it's okay to express their feelings in a small group setting. They're finding that it really helps. We offer four programs: a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, and individual sessions. Our own trained bereavement specialist Robin S. Miller personally conducts the sessions. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, friends. We have a little bit more time to chat with Randy and Connie Cipher, and that's good because this is interesting conversation. Their son, Tim, and their daughter-in-law, Janessa, and Silas. How old is Silas, by the way,
Connie? He turned 4 in May when we were there.
Mm-hmm. So they are all in Gulu,
yep,
right?
That's
Gulu,
it.
Uganda. And where they're missionaries. And you mentioned during the break, Randy, that Tim is, what would we phrase, an independent missionary? He's not
That's
sent
correct.
By any particular church?
Correct. So it's their own ministry called Cultivate Discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the idea is you're growing these pastors. But they function under the umbrella of an organization called Harvest Alliance International, which is based out in California.
Mm-hmm.
And that organization does all the administrative stuff for you. So processes donations, they have oversight, so there's rules you have to follow so you're not just sitting by the lake all day long drinking your Coca-Cola and dipping your toes in the ocean. So they kind of have oversight of you and watch how you spend your money and have training.
I was looking at some background material that you folks sent me. A Day at the Discipleship Center. whenever you have these ministers visiting. They start early in the morning, don't they?
Well, you have to beat the heat. You get up early and get going.
I never thought about that. Yeah. Yeah, their day begins at 6:45 in the morning with daily discipleship. There's work even before breakfast.
Yes.
A little work.
Most of these pastors that come in are subsistence farmers. They don't get paid to be pastors. The whole way they survive is by subsistence farming. But they take the role of pastor on a voluntary basis. So they're used to farming. And one of the things Tim has done, there's another mission organization over there called Farming God's Way. And they have, Ugandans do things the old-fashioned farming way, what they've grown up with over the years. And this mission organization, Farming God's Way, has some ways they can do things different and increase their number of crops that they grow and make it easier to grow. So when these fellows come in, they're used to working out in the fields. They're taking a week off every month for 11 months to come and get training. So they're there for a week, then they go back to their home and keep their farms going.
Ah.
But while they're at Tim's, they don't have money to pay to help with the costs. A lot of it's donations that Tim and Janessa raise. But you want these folks to buy into this, to have some skin in the game, so to speak. And because they don't have money, Tim has enough acreage there. He has 16 acres. They have crops growing on this acreage that then they use to feed these fellas. So while they're there, they'll take 2 hours out of the day, and instead of paying tuition, which they can if they want, if they have the money, or they can work in the farm fields at the mission ranch. And so they will go out and work after they have devotions in the morning, and before the sun gets too hot, they go out and work in the field for 2 hours, and Tim teaches them how to do things this new way.
So they become stakeholders, really.
Yes, exactly right.
Later in the day, as I look at the schedule, after lunch there's afternoon discussion and activities, dinner, and then evening fellowship and praise, and more devotions, and then to bed early if you're going to be up and raring to go the next morning.
Yep.
So they come for a week, then they go back to their own particular towns and take care of their agricultural activities, and then they come back in a month.
Yes, exactly right. One of the challenges, they're so far out in the bush that how do you get these people into the main town? He's on the outskirts of Gulu.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to, it's a real challenge to arrange transportation. Most of the transportation there is done by motorcycle. They call BOTAs. And my wife can tell you stories about that. But you bring the guys in from the bush either in BOTAs or little vans. And that's how you get them there, and you got to take them home. It's too far to walk or ride a horse or anything. So
Connie's chuckling. I take it she had a ride on a BOTA.
I almost had to twice, but Tim made it back, so we didn't have to. But they just have a little bit longer seat, and there'll just be hundreds of these motorcycles around. They're just swerving in and out of traffic.
Mm.
I've seen as many as 4 men in suits on one of these motorcycles.
Wow.
Tim has seen 7 or 8 with kids strapped on the front and on the back, and they're just zooming all over the place. You just have to watch for them everywhere.
So they have a pretty good network of roads then, right? Or at least in the town centers, I guess. Huh?
Yes, it's paved roads. And even going out to Tim's facility out in the bush, it's a newly paved road. Gulu, based on their population as a city in Uganda, qualified for certain Ugandan funds to build roads. So they're in the process of building roads. When Tim first moved out to this facility, it was all dirt roads going out there, but then they've paved them, and it's actually nice. It's not the blacktop like we have, but it is a hard surface. And it's like a Route 8 North. There's 2 lanes, one each direction with a berm. And but it's interesting driving there. People walk everywhere, even going out to the bush. They have schools there, and the kids all walk. So those folks walk on the berms. And again, it's a British colony, so you drive on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I did not drive because I knew I would mess that up.
It's easy to do. What about water? I've read that in a lot of developing nations, that's one of the really biggest concerns, a lack of clean water.
They're very fortunate that they have wells that they can get clean water. There is, when in downtown Gulu, there is a water system just like we have here in Butler, but it's not on all the time, either because the electric is off and the pumps can't run, or they're wells, and they pump them during the rainy season into a reserve pond. But those do go dry, and there's been times when they have been without water because it's dry. But the quality of water is pretty good. Tim told us we're not used to that water, so don't drink it, just like don't drink the water in Mexico. But
yeah.
So we would brush our teeth and drink water from bottled water. But the local people are used to that water, and they do drink it.
We're learning about Uganda. What about the topography? Is it like flat as a pancake like Indiana, or can you see like the Grand Tetons off in the distance? What's it look like there?
It was greener than I expected.
Uh-huh.
They have trees and hills. We were going out to the property. It was a dirt road for several miles, and people were still walking, and you could look out in the distance, it seemed like a mile away, and there's no houses. And I said, why are these people walking here? Where are they going? He said, well, I think there's a village, but you just always pass those people. But, yeah, it was similar to here. We also were able to do a safari down the Nile, and that was exciting, too, to have that there, something we don't have here. But, yeah, it was greener. I just thought it was going to be all dry, and I kept looking for huts and people carrying things on their heads, and I found them. It wasn't hard to find.
Mm-hmm. What about language? People speak English there? It was a former British colony.
Yep. So English is two official languages, English and Swahili.
I would do well in one of those, but not in the other.
They also have the native language, just like here you have different tongues, dialect down south or up in New York and so forth. So out there they have, it's called a Chili. I may be pronouncing that wrong.
A chuli. Yeah.
But that's the native language. So if you live out in the bush, that's what you speak. If you're in the city, they do speak English and a chuli.
And that was a challenge for the men coming in. Tim doesn't know enough a chuli, so the other pastors would speak a chuli, so Tim would teach and they would have to interpret.
Mm.
Or when we were at a church there, they asked us to say some words and we would have an interpreter who would repeat it after us loudly to the people there. So,
what an experience, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, what an experience. Were the people friendly? I've been in some countries where they're very friendly. I've been in other countries where not so friendly. I mean, did they smile? Did they greet you?
They were really friendly, great people to talk with, and greeted you and offered you food. We visit a couple pastors at their houses. The only thing they weren't friendly about was driving. You do not want to, it's like driving in New York. They were not friendly drivers.
Our time begins to run short. I could talk with the two of you all afternoon. What about food?
Well, we went to the pastor's houses, their huts pretty much that they lived in, and they were trying to prepare a feast. So they would bring in bowls of maybe 13 different dishes. We were lucky to be with Janessa cooking for us, and she knew ways to make a beef stroganoff and things like that. But when we were out there, there were things with, like, fish that I knew neither of us were going to eat. And but we could usually get samosa? Is that what they were called? It was kind of a fried taco thing that Tim knew we would eat.
Yeah, it was different. But likewise, when he goes down to the capital city for business, he'll take a couple of these pastors with him, and there's a McDonald's there, or Kentucky Fried Chicken, and those folks don't like that. We were so glad to get there to have some of that. McDonald's was great.
You're the best Mickey D's French fries you ever had.
Exactly right.
What an experience. Wow. Mm-hmm. Just tremendous. And yes. You must be so proud of your son.
He and Janessa are wonderful.
Mm. Yeah.
They really have a heart for the people and for serving Christ there.
Mm. Do they have any idea how long they might stay? Do they plan to come back to North America at some point? Or
they're there for the foreseeable future, however long that is. So they really want to get that ministry running, and they're doing a wonderful job.
They do come home once in a while, though, right?
Yes, they're able to come home every year around Thanksgiving. They come and work on our Christmas tree farm. And actually, we planted, Tim got seeds to plant over there, and he grew seedlings. And while we were there, we planted the first seedlings in Africa. So that's one way. There's so many foreigners over there from Western world that he plans to grow Christmas trees for to earn money for the ministry.
What a nice touch.
Yeah. International Christmas tree farm now.
So are you going back?
We thought probably 2 years.
I can see Connie just can't wait to get on one of those boaters again.
Right, yeah. I thought maybe I would be babysitting and send some of the kids to help them build a house in a year or two, and I would keep kids. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks so much for sharing with us.
Wonderful to have us.
Very informative and very entertaining to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah. Appreciate it.
And when you jot a note to Tim and Janessa or text them or whatever, tell them we said hi, and we're thinking about them.
Will do.
Do. Yep.
Yeah.
Great.
Randy Seifer, by the way, is the CEO of Armco Credit Union, and his wife, Connie, visiting with us today. Delightful chat. Well, listen, that wraps up our program for today. Nice to have you with us. Program note, we have high school football tonight here on WISR. Knock is at Trinity, and tomorrow night we'll be back with Penguin Hockey. Mike Lang here on WISR. So we've got a lot of sports coming up this weekend. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you Monday on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com.